Part 2, Your Journey as a Leader, Leading Others Through the Stages. Chapter 4, Stage 1, On the Verge of a Meltdown. Frank Jordan's childhood was spent on the brink. His mother died in 1945 when he was 10 years old. In a time before foster homes, he was sent to live with a series of relatives and then with families of friends he made in school. He lived in 8 different San Francisco neighborhoods in 5 years, until he was 15. He told us, "I had a lot of time on my hands, and that's dangerous. But when I turned about 12, I ran into a boys and girls club, and if it wouldn't have been for that, who knows where I would have ended up." As it turns out, Jordan ended up in some amazing places, as chief of police and then mayor of San Francisco. Now at age 71, he is a tribal leader in the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation. Moore was the founder of Intel, which invests in projects that will benefit future generations. Many parts of Jordan's story are exceptional, and we'll get to know him more in later chapters. Perhaps the feature that stands out the most is that he never gives up on anyone, especially on people many of us pretend don't exist, those at stage one. Although stage one accounts for fewer than 2% of American professionals, employed people in our studies, the percentage of those people in society is much larger. If you ask people in stage one what they think about life, as we did, you'll hear, "It's not fair," "I can't cut a break," and "You do what you have to do to survive." In this chapter, we'll look into stage one, what it looks like from the inside, how it works, and what you can do to nudge people out of it. Stage 1. For many readers of this book, early stage 1 is as foreign as life on Mars, but it is a reality for millions of Americans, many of whom end up employed at some point. Companies need to know what to do about stage 1, and our society has to address it. As a former police officer, Jordan sometimes receives cold welcomes in San Francisco community events. People sometimes tell him, "You're the problem." "Why?" he asks. As though Jordan were the entire police force, he often hears, "You arrested my brother," and "You broke down my door." He told us, "You have to see it from their side. There's a resentment because they feel life is upside down. They don't know who else to take it out on. So you listen and listen and listen." Once he hears all the reasons why people distrust police, he'll say, "I've been there. I don't know how difficult your situation is, but I've had some difficult situations too." As he describes his life to community groups and to children one-on-one, he tells about many of his childhood friends who ended up in violence and in prison. He told us, "Some of my friends were stealing cars and money out of their mother's and father's wallets. Some started to shoplift. It starts out so easy. We'd find someone coming out of a side door at a theater, and we'd slip in and see movies for free. If you continue down that road, it's how you end up in the wrong crowd." We would change the end of that sentence to a stage one tribe. He told us, "If I talk to a group of 45 people, I might reach 5, and then another 5. But what else can you do?" When Jordan's successful, he often gets them involved in the Boys and Girls Clubs, where, as he says, they have mentors and teachers for everything. Jordan is right. The best way to jump out of stage one, the zone of prisons and gangs, is to become involved in tribes with a later dominant stage. Exploring stage one. We ask people in stage one to tell us about life, and we listen to what words they associated with it. We heard not fair, shit, pointless, and all effed up. The most common word we heard was sucks. People at stage one don't just believe life sucks. For them, it does suck. They think they are reporting the way it is. In fact, their view is a direct consequence of the language they use. In our research, we were doing a consulting project for a youth center that helps get kids out of gangs. I sat with someone new, fresh off the streets, as the staff described him. As often happens when people with different language systems sit down, we couldn't communicate at all. I tried to give him a pep talk, and the boy shifted his weight, leaned on an elbow, and said, "Man, you just don't get it at all." He was right. In fact, neither of us got it. It was like shining a red light into a green filter. No matter how much a person says it's really red, it still looks green to the person on the other side of the lens. No matter how much I said life doesn't suck, for that young man, it did suck. And from his perspective, I was just stupid for not seeing it. So what is it like to live inside stage one? From our research, it goes something like this. Life sucks, so there's no point to values, vision, or morality. In fact, these seem like con games designed to make us miss the obvious truth of life, which is that it isn't fair. It's a vile place, and we all die. Sure, life would be better if everyone followed the game, but at its core, life sucks. And so it's better and easier to give into the reality of the situation. Moving others up. The essence of advancing stages is giving up the language and behavior of one zone and adopting the practices of the next. People can't skip stages. That is, a person cannot go from one to three. Like pass and go in Monopoly, they have to visit stage two first. Sometimes this process means switching tribes. People move out of stage one by moving to a tribe where the offending behavior is not tolerated. The mother of a former gang member whose son began attending a church-run youth center told us, "I'm worried. He used to be so alive, and now it's like the cord got pulled." From a tribal perspective, her son went from the fire of despairing hostility, stage one, to the passivity of being an apathetic victim, stage two. This was progress. When we interviewed him, he looked sad and said, "This place sucks. I don't know anyone here." He'd gone from the alienation of stage one to the disconnection of stage two. If people in his situation follow the advice in later chapters, they will continue their forward progress into stage three and beyond. Leverage points for a person at stage one. 1. If the person is willing to move forward, encourage him to go where the action is. This means having lunch with coworkers, attending social functions, and going to meetings. 2. Encourage him to notice ways in which life itself works. For example, a person can notice that your life is pretty good, so it's possible that his life may improve. 3. Encourage him to cut ties with people who share the "life sucks" language. Success indicators. 1. He will use "my life sucks" language as opposed to "life sucks." In other words, his concern has shifted from a generalized gripe to a specific set of reasons why his life doesn't function as it should. In particular, he'll compare himself to others' abilities, social advantages, and most of all, interpersonal connections. 2. He will exhibit the passive apathy of stage 2, as opposed to the despairing hostility of stage 1. This shift may appear as a setback to people who aren't familiar with tribal leadership. In fact, it is a major step forward. 3. He will cut his social ties to people who are in stage 1.